Today's Rewind episode is about one of the most under-discussed topics for men in general, and that is miscarriage. For this episode, Sean and I were joined by the incredible Ollie Brown, a man who is single-handedly changing the conversation around miscarriage. In a few short weeks, Ollie will embark on an incredible challenge, running 39 marathons in 39 weeks over 39 counties of England. To hear Ollie's story, please listen to this episode. It is a true inspiration. Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast. Today is an important episode, and we're going to be discussing a topic that a lot of men go through but don't discuss openly, especially in public, and that is miscarriage and baby loss. Ag is an amazing guy, so welcome, Ollie Brown.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you on, Ollie, and I can't wait to hear about what you're doing and for you to share your exciting adventure that's coming up with our listeners. So let's get straight onto it. What brought you to this moment?
Yeah. So I guess firstly, again, to reiterate, thank you so much for having me on. It's a real privilege. And I know it's a bit of a deviation from some of the topics that you guys normally cover. So it's a real honor for me to have the opportunity to share what we're doing and talk about miscarriage in a great space with great people and hopefully with some relevance to your listeners. So thank you very much. How did we get here? 3 years ago now, my now wife and I were merrily ticking along. We'd met in London, been together for a couple of years, just got engaged, moved out to the countryside, decided to start trying to have kids, got pregnant, thankfully, reasonably quickly without too much hassle, had our early appointments, all was well. My wife had a bit of bleeding throughout the early weeks, but we've been told it was nothing to worry about. We had nothing to compare it to, so no reason to suspect anything otherwise. Went for our 12-week scan. All was fine. An amazing experience, especially for the first time. There's a head and there's a heart and there's arms and legs. There's a little human there that you've made. Told all of our family, told all of our friends, we're pregnant, much celebrating, congratulations. And then literally, I think a week later, my wife started bleeding again, a bit heavier, went in. They checked her over, no heartbeat. You're having a miscarriage. And then we had 2-3 days in hospital of probably 2 or 3 of the worst days of my life. It was an experience that we weren't prepared for, one that you can't really imagine or anticipate. And sat with my wife while she gave birth to a child that we knew wasn't going to survive. That then shifted attitudes towards pregnancy going forward, towards having kids, towards how we saw everyone else's pregnancies around us. And obviously we're both at the time, we've just turned 30, still everyone's having kids, everyone's pregnant, it's all around us. And so it really shifted perspectives on that. But also I found then made me and us a lot more aware of miscarriage in general. Once people knew that you'd had one and you'd been through that experience, they go, oh, we had a miscarriage, or oh, brother had a miscarriage, or my cousin had a miscarriage. And you begin to realize that there's this, it's almost like a subculture. It's going on everywhere, and everyone you know is in contact with someone who has had a miscarriage or baby loss of some, I would almost guarantee it. It's just not spoken about. We've seen a lot of friends around us going through, sadly, similar experiences. Sometimes to the point where I almost feel almost a bit fraudulent in having these conversations and saying these things, because actually, to my mind, in comparison with some of the experiences that other people have been through, ours was fairly minor. And I don't want to downplay it at all, because it was a very difficult time. But we had a miscarriage. We got pregnant again 3-4 months later, I think. We now have a daughter. She's very happy. She's very healthy. Loved to bits. And we're very lucky that our experience to date of miscarriage and baby loss was quite brief in the grand scheme of things. Others have had far worse and far more prolonged experiences of miscarriages. But nonetheless, it's not a competition. It's difficult for everyone, but it's certainly, I think that's been the big change, is that it's really opened my eyes and our eyes to the fact that it's going on everywhere. It's very common. And it doesn't get spoken about, as Kieran alluded to in the introduction. So that's how we find ourselves where we are now and looking to take on the challenge and the journey that we are.
Yeah. First of all, mate, I'm truly sorry for your loss. I know you've mentioned that you now have a daughter? You have a daughter now? But you never forget. You never forget the ones you lose. And so I just wanted to say, look, from a guy that's been there and experienced it, sorry for your loss, mate.
Thank you for sharing that. It couldn't have been easy. And sorry to hear of your loss. And absolutely, it's not a case of like comparing yourself to others. Like every loss should be treated in its own merit and grieved accordingly. And like Kieran said, it's remembered in its own way as well. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm sorry for what you both went through.
Yeah, thank you.
You mentioned quite a few significant things there. And like the first one that really jumped out for me was that 12-week scan. It's advised, don't tell anyone before your 12-week scan. First trimester, that's the high risk. There's the chances of you could lose a baby. And so don't tell anyone. But then when you have that success, I experienced this myself, and you have that success and you start telling people, then the loss comes. Yeah. And it's almost, you feel like you've been given something that's been taken away. That's how I felt. And then I had to explain everyone why this magical present that was supposed to be coming to the family isn't coming anymore. It's a layer of emotion that you don't know exists until you experience it.
I fully agree. And actually, when we then got pregnant for the second time, we completely changed our approach, because we actually told quite a few people almost straight away.
Mm.
Parents, brothers and sisters, very close friends, because we weren't sure what was going to happen. We weren't sure if we were going to go through the same thing again. And actually, our thought process was, if it does happen again, we want everyone to be in the loop, and because we want their support. We want to be able to talk to them about it, because as difficult as having the conversation from going, as difficult as the conversation was going from we're having a baby to we've had a miscarriage, imagine how awkward that conversation would be with my mum, for example, to say, we've had another miscarriage. And she says, I didn't even know you were pregnant. Mm-hmm. On one side, we told a lot of people a lot earlier, but then on the other side, the wider net, the sort of work conversations and the wider circle friends, we didn't really share the news until sort of 16 plus weeks, when Amy was really, she was really showing by that stage.
I can understand that. I think it's an individual thing, isn't it? Because we really locked down. We didn't tell anyone. It was still raw. It was still painful when we were going through more cycles of, in our case, IVF, ICSI. And there was enough emotion on top of it. You know, I didn't want the additional stress of the questions. To be fair, I think people that were around us knew something was going on when we were going for an additional cycle, but we didn't openly tell people, mainly because we wanted to safeguard ourselves a little bit more. Like I said, it's an individual thing, and people should always think what's right for them, especially when they're experience something like miscarriage and then want to break the news, or don't want to break the news in future potential successful situations. When it actually happened, how was the support for you as a man from the hospital?
I've got a bad word to say about the hospital. I think as much as it's a difficult situation for us, they're not the deliveries that midwives want to be helping with. We had a lady called Sarah who was our midwife I feel like she was there for 2 days straight. I'm sure she must have gone home at some point, but she was very supportive. Everything, understandably, was predominantly focused on Amy and what she was going through, and because she was going through the physical side of it. I wasn't pushed to one side. I felt supported. They had a grief support system within the hospital. They offered funerals. We could meet the baby afterwards if we wanted to. It was very much, as you said, Kieran, about deciding whether or not to tell people, it was led by us. It's here are your options, if you want to have a proper funeral, you can, et cetera, et cetera. So it was, there was support there from the hospital. As ever with hospitals, they're busy and there's only so much that they can do. I think the main thing from us and from a fertility perspective, the main thing that we were looking for were answers to, as to what had happened, why it had happened. Is it something that's likely to happen again? Is there something underlying on with either myself or Amy that could cause this to happen in the future? And is there anything we can do about it? Which is where the challenge leads in the cause that we're supporting down the line as well, and the work that Tommy's do to help in that space. But from that point of view, we were given every option that we could have wanted, really. That we had a consultant that we dealt with directly who took us through the whole process and was very informative, very patient, and really helped us, you know, stuck with us until she was happy that we had all the answers we wanted. That, I guess, is all very couples focused and aimed at both Amy and myself. I guess your question was more from a male perspective, did I feel supported? I did not feel supported. I don't think there was necessarily anything specifically aimed at me. There was also a lot of medical care, which was specifically aimed at Amy, and then some additional support provided for the both of us. So yeah, no major complaints from certainly from the hospital's perspective. They're an incredible team.
How about from friends, family, and did you open up to them and maybe even workplace as well?
Yeah, my work situation is interesting in that I actually work for a very old friend of mine. And that's an interesting one, actually, because I was thinking about this earlier. When we found out that Amy was having a miscarriage, she was in hospital, she was on various pain reliefs and things, wasn't necessarily with it the whole time. So it fell on me to let people know what was going on and have those conversations. I spoke to both of my parents, both of Amy's parents, our brothers and sisters. Was very calm, very practical, very to the point, which I think, and this is perhaps a male thing, you go into that mode of, I've got a job to do now. Everyone else is going to be upset. I can't be upset because that's not going to help the situation, when obviously underneath, I was very upset. So I had those three or four sort of initial conversations and very calm, very to the point. Yes, I'm looking after her. Don't worry, she's okay. All those sorts of things. And then I spoke to the chap that I work with because I had to say, look, I'm going to be at work for a couple of days. How are we going to make that work? And within seconds of being on the phone to him, I was in floods of tears. And I just, a good 5 minutes, just couldn't get it together because he was the first person for whom I didn't need to hide anything. And possibly in hindsight, I'm lucky, very lucky, because he is a close friend and I felt very comfortable having that conversation with him. But I guess in hindsight, quite an odd choice of the first person I cried to about what had happened, because you think mum or dad or whoever would be the obvious one. But it's not a way I'd thought about it before thinking about coming speaking to you guys today. But actually, perhaps that is the male sort of default setting, is I need to be strong and solid for these people and hold things together. And then once I'm outside of that, I can have my time with my friend who, it doesn't matter if I'm holding things up for him. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I think that's so powerful and perfectly summarized, really. I think sometimes some of the rhetoric around men being strong and silent and bottling things up can be a bit misguided, because there is a space for that and a need for that. But what is crucial on the other side of that is that we're not just bottling it up because you become a pressure cooker. I'm so pleased to hear that you had that person and time and space to do that with. What an incredible friend, and what an incredibly powerful thing for you to do, to open up like that. And that must have felt, I'd imagine, quite exhausting afterwards. There's a big emotional dump there, but quite a relief maybe to actually step out of that strong, supportive space and actually into the space where you acknowledged that you needed to get that off your chest as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think I can put it better than that. I think it was a big relief after 12 hours in a hospital room and a few sad conversations with some parents. Yeah, absolutely. It was just like letting the pressure valve go.
Yeah, good man.
Yeah, I think my own experiences is several times, and that's happened every year. You just keep quiet because you think everyone else around you needs you to be that strong individual, and they do at some points. But when it goes, it's almost unstoppable, isn't it? Like, I remember crying several occasions during the early pregnancy for my son, originally we had twins on board, and we found out at the 12-week scan that we had an early scan, and there was two, 7-week scan, and there was two embryos. So we went back for the 12-week, and we found out that one of them had died. And I remember this horrendous feeling come over me, loss again. I bottled it. I could feel it was there, like it wanted to go straight away. And it wasn't until one of the nurses was outside and she just put her arm around me. And I just popped, boom, tears everywhere. But Jen wasn't in the room. No one was in the room. It was just me and this nurse. I think she had spotted signs that I was about to crack. And for my own dignity, she took me aside and looked after me. So any nurses that are listening to this, you incredibly important people. We've talked about it before on the podcast, haven't we, Sean, how valuable they are. And you've just echoed that, Ollie, in terms of the care that you had. They do it professionally. But yeah, that was one of the situations where I definitely felt it pop. You just can't help it. You just feel that bottle fills up. And to any guy listening, let it go. Whatever situation you're in, I think if it's coming, it's better to let it go than to bottle it up. Because when you keep bottling it up, that's when the problem comes, isn't it?
Yeah, it's that pressure cooker thing. And that's what I say to my wife, is that because quite often we're just so full on with life and with the young kids and that. I say to her, don't worry, I have an outlet. I speak to my mates quite openly. I speak to poor Kieran every day with stuff. And it's almost sometimes that transactional problem-solving relationship with my wife when it comes to stuff. But then when we need to, we do share. It's completely acceptable to have those different spaces and friends for different situations. And then, of course, your partner is always going to be the person that where communication is most important in whatever way that is. So, of course, sometimes that's going to be being like very vulnerable and upset. And then other times it's that more practical, okay, this needs to happen now. And I just think that we're quite passionate here that we shouldn't be told what's right and what's wrong, because every situation is different. Every person's different. Every relationship's different.
Yeah, definitely. Everyone processes things differently. In terms of like your experience of miscarriage, how has that changed your approach to your own mental health?
Good question. I think I would consider myself quite fortunate from that perspective. I wouldn't say that I'm someone who has struggled with mental health particularly, and I'm aware that I'm perhaps quite fortunate from that perspective. I'm always quite forward-thinking, right, this is the problem we've got, how are we going to deal with it? Let's get it sorted and move through. I think that an older friend of mine once said to me, when I was in the early stages of my relationship with Amy, he said, I'm really glad that everything's going well. You seem really good. Let me know when something's gone wrong, because then you'll know. And I think that's, whilst it was a horrible experience to have gone through, I think certainly that was a reassuring experience for us as a couple, that she was 100% the right person for me to be with and vice versa. And I think that's quite a boost from a mental health perspective, feeling you're comfortable in your relationship and you're there and you're with the right person. I wouldn't have necessarily wanted to have gone through what we did in order to be 100% certain of that, but it definitely helped. In terms of how I approach my own mental health and whether that's changed, I think it's just, and I'm sure we'll come on to this more when we talk about the challenge itself, but it's made me more aware of the importance of sharing things when they're not necessarily going well.
Oh, so you mean that everything we see on social media, all the highlights, that's not real life? What? Hang on a minute.
It's all real. It's all real.
It's so true. And I think I've probably said it before on the podcast, but I take full credit for leveling up our friendship group of my mates I grew up with, because when I shared about my infertility, 3 years into it, I have to add, but they were amazing. But it was the first big life issue that any of us shared with each other. And we were just lads up to then, very good friends. But ever since then, we've been so open and like a lot. It's just, we've matured. And I take full credit for that. But yeah, it's because like you said, it showed them that vulnerability is okay. Opening up is okay. And that we're not all living through this filtered version of our lives that people see on social media. And that everyone suffers in some way. And when you show that ability to open up, it also provides that ability for others to open up to you. So fair play. You've been that person.
Trust me. It's incredible. Yeah. And we're going to get onto it in a minute. What are you going to do? But I like the way you explained about finding that person that is willing to stand by you for anything. And it is so important. It is so important, especially when you're going through things like baby loss, miscarriage, or fertility. There's that saying that says, is it fine that person that's willing to dance in the rain with you? Sometimes it's a thunderstorm, and it's an incredibly powerful thing to have a strong partner next to you to help and support you when you need it, because they know you and they get to know you and they get to know those little telltale signs. That's amazing. So I think we should really talk about this amazing challenge that you're going to do. We haven't mentioned anything about it yet, because I want you to describe it. Because when we were on the phone a couple of days ago, I could hear the passion coming through your voice and the excitement, although maybe trepidation a little bit about what you're going to do.
Yeah.
But the passion
comes in waves.
Yeah.
Sure. The plan for next year, essentially, we're starting the last weekend of December 2025, is to run 39 marathons across 39 consecutive weeks, one in each historic county of England. The historic's important purely because there are 39 of those, rather than a few more as there are in the modern world. We're planning to run each week with someone who is experienced or involved with miscarriage, baby loss of some way, has a story to share, something to add to the conversation around miscarriage and baby loss. We're going to be having conversations with those people ahead of time, hoping to put together a podcast type thing each week to share their story. And very importantly, the whole thing is aimed at raising funds for Tommies, who are the baby loss miscarriage charity, to help them to continue all of the amazing work that they do to research and support medical professionals in trying to prevent miscarriage, as well as supporting people afterwards. And the scope of their work goes further than miscarriage into sort of wider fertility issues, supporting people through IVF. They're a fantastic charity. They're an amazing outfit. Yeah. A big challenge. Yeah. As you say, sometimes I'm very excited about it. Sometimes I shit myself a little bit about it. But I wanted to do something meaningful. I wanted to do something that would not just be a fundraising effort, which is a very important side to what we're trying to do, but also to be an awareness machine and a conversation starter. And obviously we're looking to start those 39 specific conversations over the course of the year, but then we hope that it will spark more conversations and just general awareness around the issue, which, as we said at the start, we decided to have a baby, not even considering that miscarriage was an option. And now we're very aware that it is. So if we can bring a bit of realization and awareness and storytelling around, that's as important as the money.
Absolutely. Mate, that is incredible. Wow. Yeah, it's a hell of a challenge, like you said, but hell of a cause, like very important. And we obviously know of Tommies, they are fantastic. And yeah, we will support you in any way we can. And somehow that means we're being roped into running.
Well, absolutely. We're talking about this before we came on. Kieran's thrown himself into it head first. I think Sean's been dragged into it by his ankles. But there'll be a lot of running from the Male Fertility Podcast crew over the course of next year.
First of all, you offered him like a 10K part of it. I was like, no, he's all in.
I know the statistics, and Ollie, as you said at the very outset, this is a lot more prevalent in society than at first people may know. Then it's one of those things that when you've experienced it or you're in a sphere like we are, you do know how common it is. And I haven't experienced it, but I will support it anyway. And if that means running the marathon, of course I will. But then, we need to get someone else as well who can, I think, definitely give that lived experience for the Cornwall leg. And I have no doubt we will get someone. But yeah, as sure. I said, we will support you in any way we can.
Fantastic.
If you're starting in December, are you already training?
Yeah, just coming to the end of an initial 6-week block now, just to remind my body how to run. I'm not starting from scratch. I do enjoy running. We spoke about mental health earlier. Often my release valve that we spoke about doesn't need to be talking to someone. It'll just be going for a run, just getting out, getting some fresh air, getting a bit of headspace. That often does it for me. So running is something I've always enjoyed. But yeah, the training will start to ramp up in the now through to the end of the year. It's quite a long time still, thankfully. Next year will be a consistency game. It's not, we're not looking to set world records, not even looking to set PBs each week. It's very much a case of getting it done, doing the distance and getting around the country and having those conversations. As I said, it's just as important. Just being consistent through the next 6 months and making sure the body's not going to fall apart next year is the main focus.
My PT head says that the maintenance of that 39 weeks is a long time, and it's going to take some real dedication. And that's why this has drawn me in so much. This isn't just, like you said, a one-off thing. This is nearly a whole, three quarters of a year.
Mm.
You're going to dedicate your life to raising awareness, and it will go beyond that. 39 weeks, man. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's not even, we've focused, and quite rightfully, on the incredible physical challenge it's going to be, but logistically as well, planning that's quite the task.
We haven't got stuck into that side of things yet. I'm looking forward to that. It's the sort of thing, bit of a jigsaw puzzle, that, isn't it? Just trying to piece everything together. As you said, Kieran, almost a year, three quarters of a year, more accurately, it's 9 months, which is something I didn't mention before. And that's the sort of part of the reason behind it. Obviously, a standard term pregnancy is 40 weeks. We're doing 39 to suggest the fact that they don't all make it to 40 weeks. But equally, I have to be very careful how I word this bit, because I'm aware I could get a lot of flack from our female counterparts. But it's a way that I saw as coming as close as possible as a bloke could to being pregnant. I'm going to be tired pretty much all the time. I'm going to be hungry pretty much all the time. Things are going to hurt that I never knew existed. There's going to be the mental challenge of, it's not, I can't have a week off. We do one and then we go again and we go again and we go again. And I guess that's, hopefully I haven't upset anyone.
You've just explained exactly what I was thinking. Like, the body will take, it's going to take a bit of a battering. The mind's going to take a battering. You're going to be all over the place in terms of sleeping here, sleeping there. It's just the way it's going to be. But an amazing adventure for you individually, but also you're doing it for a fantastic cause. And it all interconnects, like the way you've explained it, 39 weeks. There's also the philosophical thought process of, this is how women feel to some extent when they're going through pregnancy. It just continuously gets more stressful for the body. No, it's amazing, mate. Truly is. And as we've joked about, but in serious note, me and Sean, like, we'll be there. Somewhere along the line, we're going to be there. When you come up to Yorkshire or wherever you need me that I've got a link to, I'll be there, man. I've got a few kilograms to lose before then, man. Someone that likes powerlifting is suddenly going to run a marathon. I've been making lots of notes.
It will stand you in good stead from experience. The last time I was doing lots of running was just off the back of my rowing career. Career makes it sound a lot more professional than it was. My time rowing, should I say, which off the back of that, I had a lot of my strength in my legs and my back and everything was a lot better than it is these days. And I noticed it when I was running. So that's something I'm working on to prepare for next year. It's building some strength up again, but certainly for you going the other way, starting, you can get running fit reasonably easily. Getting strong isn't hard work.
So. You're putting more pressure. I think it's easier the other way around.
Okay.
But that's because that's what I'm used to. That's what I've always done. Played rugby at a young age. It was about short, intensive periods of CV exercise along with strength. That was perfect for me. But that longer endurance stuff is something that I'm looking forward to getting involved with. It's going to be a challenge. And like you said, it's for an amazing cause. But we must highlight that it was obviously going to be another 30 plus people involved in this. Sean's touching it. In my head, I'm like, oh, that's a logistical nightmare. But it's part of the puzzle and part of the enjoyment, isn't it? So
it is, absolutely. And it's the sort of cliche that gets reeled out with things like these. But it's the other people that are involved that really make it doable. And I don't think I could do it without them. We're very much in the recruitment phase now, just trying to get bums on seats, if you like, and fill up the slots. Even now, some of the stories that people have shared with me, shared with Amy, shared, just been happy to discuss very openly. And some of the people that have come out of the woodwork and said, oh, actually, we've had an experience. And people surprisingly close to home that you just think, how on earth did I not know about this before? It just validates the whole process. And that's been, it's been almost as enjoyable. I'm sure, hopefully it'll peak more next year as we really get going. But even those initial, you get a message on Instagram from someone who you haven't spoken to in years, and it's, I'd love to get involved. Me and my wife had a miscarriage 2 years ago. We've been thinking of something, a way to commemorate it or to give something back. And this is the perfect outlet for us. And thanks so much for doing it. And you just, it's those people and those stories along the way that will make it 100% what it is and what it will be. So yeah, if we have to figure out some logistics to make that happen, then that's the least of it, really.
Yeah. Yeah. You've mentioned obviously raising money and raising the awareness, but is there anything else you would like to come out of the challenge in terms of, for example, just men being braver to be able to speak out about how they feel?
I guess that's the overall goal, isn't it? By encouraging the conversations to happen, you're making the whole space more open. I think that's particularly relevant for men.
If you could give one bit of advice to a man who's experiencing or has experienced miscarriage or baby loss, what would that piece of advice be?
I guess that what I experienced was, there is a natural, as we spoke about earlier, there's that natural male role that you fall into of being strong, being pragmatic. And I'd never want to downplay that, because I do think it is important. You do need to do that. And as far as you can, you be that person. But as you said, it's, things will only be made better by talking about them. I haven't seen a situation in which they're made worse. And so, yeah, find that person that you can talk to, that you think will listen, and it'll definitely help. And I think for people of my age in general, a piece of advice would be, and this is something I struggle with around this topic, because I never want to be the, when you hear someone says, oh, we're pregnant, you never want to be the person who goes, hope it's all okay. They're having a very exciting life moment, and you don't want to be the Debbie Downer on everything. But I guess the thing that I hope will come out of all of this is just for people to be more balanced in their approach to pregnancy, and hopefully not, but the potential of miscarriage, and just know a little bit more about it, be more grounded with their approach, and know where they can go for help and support if unfortunately things do go not quite as planned.
I think that's my favorite piece of advice that's ever been given on this whole podcast. Like, all, how many series are we in now, Kieran? Four? This
four.
Is four, is it?
Yeah, four.
Of all the people we've had on, of all the professionals we've had on, wow, thank you. That was incredible.
Yeah, that's a real honest bit of advice, isn't it? Because you do have that, you do ride that wave initially, and you never see a storm coming, do you? But to just have it in the back of your head that one step at a time is incredible advice, mate. Thank you. So, Ollie, if someone wanted to get involved, how would they do that? Because obviously you've still got a few sets of trainers to fill, and no, not loads, but a few. And there's someone listening to this that thinks, this is something I really want to get involved in. How can they contact you?
Absolutely. As you say, yeah, we're still recruiting. So there's all sorts of ways that people can get involved. The main focus for now is, as you say, filling those pairs of trainers. So if anyone's got stories around miscarriage or baby loss that they're willing to share, and they want to do some running as well, great. We've got a real spectrum of people who've had miscarriages, people who've been through IVF. We've got a medical week in there with a team from the neonatal unit in Nottinghamshire. We've got some midwives on. So we're really covering the whole spectrum. If it's in any way related, give us a message. We'll be happy to have you on. And likewise, if it's just a more of a general support role, we've got people offering to just come for a run because they like running and they want to join in, fundraising, accommodation, come along with some cakes, like anything. We want a real community vibe. So yeah, please, if you've got any interest in being involved, do get in touch. Best ways to find us, we're on Instagram. It's at Marathons for Miracles. That's the title of the project, Marathons for Miracles. You can send us an email, marathonsformiracles@gmail.com. And yeah, they're the best ways to get in touch. Instagram, we're daring. What we're up to, training, things around miscarriage that are coming up. There was a big story in the news today, which we haven't even spoken about, around changes to bereavement leave for miscarriage, which has been a lot of noise around. So all those sorts of things we're sharing on Instagram. And there's also links there to my Strava to watch the running progress and to the Just Giving page for those who want to donate.
Yeah, that's perfect. I think just before we go, we should actually mention the amazing news that has come out in the last few days in terms of the changes to legal requirements. I distinctly remember wishing I could have just stepped away from everything for a week, because that's what it's for, isn't it? It's the legal obligation that employers offer a minimum week for pre-24 week loss, which, fantastic, amazing. We could almost do a whole podcast on that in itself, but it's important that we mention that.
It's an important step. And it's, as I said earlier, Tommy's and the work that Tommy's do isn't purely miscarriage focused and research focused. They've been unsurprisingly heavily involved in the campaigning around what's led to the decision. An incredible organization that they're just pushing everything in the right direction in this space. My humble opinion, worth ours and everyone else's support.
Yeah. Top guy, man. Well said. Couldn't say any more better myself. So on that point, good luck with your preparations, mate. Keep us in the loop.
Your preparations.
Yeah. I've only got to do the one. I reckon I'm all right. This is quite, how can I put it? Strengthened brain. I'll get through it. But we're in it all together, aren't we, at the end of the day?
We've just got to harness our inner Goggins. We'll be fine.
So Sean's just going to drive next to us while I'm doing my bit, shouting abuse at me on a scooter. Yeah, man, we'll speak to you soon. And thanks so much once again for coming on. So
that was amazing. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favour and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to cover on the mailbag, drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message and we love hearing from our listeners. And if you'd like a bit more expert guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by guys that get it. For our latest updates, follow us on social media at the Male Fertility Podcast. And remember, gents, you're not on your own.